Welcome to episode 10 of Sailing Infidels, on the outside looking in, on the inside getting out. This is the continuing tale of the Sailing Infidels COVID-19 experience. As COVID was slowly fading away, we emerged from our little semi-protected world into a much busier and brighter world, a world that was more inviting and full of promise. We found the town of Ucluelet to be very friendly and welcoming, with a few exceptions, of course, but by and large, a very nice place to spend our last summer in Canada. Over the summer, we had completed our projects and prepared for our trip. I had my gallbladder removed, and we were all vaxxed up and ready to hit the high seas. Our friend, who had also been planning the trip to Mexico, was going to be our buddy boat for the journey, but had served notice earlier in the summer that he would not be going. We thought we were going to be out there on our own, but just a couple of days before we were set to push off, a couple who had just arrived in the marina approached us to say that they were looking for a buddy boat for their trip south. We showed them our course and plan, and we set a date for departure that would work for both boats, September 16th. The morning of the 16th arrived, and we were off the dock by 0800, motoring out of the harbor into a bright, sunshiny day.
On the way.
Okay, so we just left the inlet at Ucluelet, and we're out into the somewhat rolly seas here. Wendy's down below, making sure everything's fallen to where it's going to fall to. And our buddy boat is creeping up alongside of us here. We've got only about 8 knots of wind, so I would kind of like to put the mainsail up at least as soon as wind is available to come up to the cockpit. We'll do that, I think. Maybe it'll settle things down a bit for us, hopefully. Beyond that, it looks like a sunny day, and I think we're going to be motoring. Yeah, whatever. That's the way she goes. We get our sea legs, and we'll all be good.
That first day was full of mixed emotions for us. First, there was the excitement of finally leaving Canada after 10 years of planning and scheming and boat work and spending, sometimes wondering if it was ever really going to become a reality. Beyond all that, there was also the edginess owing to embarking on a long offshore voyage after having just completed much extensive work on critical mechanical systems aboard. We were aiming to be 100 miles offshore, and I was starting to think that maybe a 30-mile shakedown cruise wasn't quite enough. At this point, though, the only other alternative would have been to head back up to Newton Cove and stay another year. That was just slightly less desirable than skipping winter, even with the specter of a possible disaster at sea. Although we've been sailing the coast of BC for nearly 10 years, and in that time have certainly had a lot of milestones, nothing compares to this one. I mean, there have been many actually more important than this one, in that without them, this one would never have come to be. But this one, assuming we make it, well, even if we don't, I guess, will undoubtedly be the greatest to date of our entire lives.
Day one of this journey started, like many of our other journeys, on a Friday. I'm not a superstitious kind of guy, but
we're doomed. You got a woman eating a banana on a boat on a Friday when we just left port. What in the hell is the matter with me? Might as well whistle me up a tune.
Okay, that's enough.
After a while, the excitement wore off, and it wasn't too long before the nerves settled and we were both relaxed into the groove. The first few days were filled with light to no wind, gentle swell, and quite a bit of boredom. We motored for a while on the first night and left our buddy boat behind, knowing he would eventually catch us. That helped to provide entertainment over the next several days as we tried to find each other. I had sent him the GPX file of our route in an email, but either he couldn't figure out how to get it into his chart plotter or couldn't be bothered. Rather, he was periodically calling on the radio or texting to our Zolio asking for the coordinates of our next waypoint. I was surprised how long it took them to finally find us and then to actually pass us. For them, it became a little more than a game, though, as they needed some hydraulic steering fluid, and finding us was their only option.
Well, that's our buddy boat there.
doing his damnedest to catch us. We beat him to the last waypoint. Now he's got a mission to beat us to the next one.
Later that day, we finally hooked up with them to transfer that hydraulic fluid that they needed for their autopilot, and then we left them behind for them to take care of their issues. It took the rest of the day, but they finally did pass us again, just barely. Then when the wind died out completely, they decided to heave to for the night. We continued under the power of the Garth Monster, leaving them behind by yet another good margin.
We are 2.5 miles from the extension of the California-Oregon border. So, doing 5 knots would be in a half hour. Looking forward to some of that warm California sun.
Day 7. 41 degrees, 21.844 minutes north, 126 degrees, 34.841 minutes west. We awoke from a calm night with little swell and little wind, though there was enough to keep us moving along at 3 or 4 knots with not a lot of banging around in the swell. It was the best night's sleep either of us had since we left the dock. And shamefully, I know, I'm not even joking. In our defense, we both did get up a couple of times each and did thorough scans of the horizon for lights, as well as to check the AIS and make sure we were still on course. I awoke after sunup and felt excellent. The sun was poking through big puffy gray clouds that were slowly breaking apart all across the sky. I checked the chart and was amazed to see how well Otto handled the light air. Wendy came to a few minutes later, and before long we had coffee and smiles on our faces. We even did some boat projects in the afternoon. We were having some charging issues, though. I was not sure what was going on there, but we had a battery-to-battery charger that was not charging the big lithium battery. The new, smaller lithium battery didn't appear to be charging either, but that was an error in reporting from the battery monitor. Our wind died out around dinner time, and with battery charging in mind, we fired up the bilge Yankee and motored into day 8. We finally managed our first 100-mile day, measured from midnight to midnight. Not coincidentally, we also crossed our waypoint offshore of Cape Mendocino, and were sailing in winds of 20 to nearly 30 knots. The barometer went from 1,016 to 1,019 millibar over a couple of hours, and the ambient temperature at the masthead went up to 18.5 degrees Celsius from 17.7 in the same period. We had used about 12 gallons of our 68-gallon fuel tankage by that time, and were nearly halfway there. Our buddy boat, obviously, they had their own issues affecting their decisions and strategy. Seasickness and fuel conservation seemed to have been the top two issues for them, though I don't think they motored anywhere near the amount we had, if at all. I was still sending them waypoint coordinates and headings from our route, and we were about 35 miles ahead of them.
A beautiful sunrise, day 7.
We're 100 nautical miles off of California and ghosting along with full Genoa and full main, doing between 2 and 3 knots with only 5-6 knots of breeze, and it is super calm. This is the ocean. 100 nautical miles off of California. We'll be coming up to Cape Mendocino in a few hours. Day 8, 1 week we've been at sea, coming around Cape of Mendocino, and it's pretty lumpy.
Cape Mendocino. What are you doing?
I'm making banana muffins.
Bananas. No wonder we're in a big storm. It's like Cape Horn out here, man. And you're making banana muffins.
I am. Because I want banana muffins.
Nino Mendocino torments this old wretch. When the winds come up and the seas run high, and there's 100 miles of fetch. Nino Mendocino, I'm
talking about the Cape. She's mean and she's mad and she's big and she's bad, and you'll feel like you can never escape. But you can escape. When she stills the swell that comes from hell and leaves you breathless in her wake. Mean old Mendocino, a lesson for us all. Be prepared for your reception down at Point Conception. Mendocino was your wake-up call.
Though the winds weren't terribly high, we saw 28 plus knots, and our buddy boat, our partners in brine, reported seeing up to 32. It was the seas that were quite remarkable, though Lance and I agreed that they were up to about 4 to 5 meters high, with just a short period between. They were coming onto our port quarter directly from the direction of Cape Mendocino, with 120 miles to fetch by the time they reached us. Late one night, a bottle of the beloved spirit of the infidel left the security of its nest and took flight across the cabin to lose its cork and drain its contents upon landing. At least the bottle never broke. Sailors often talk about the challenges of cooking at sea, but none has ever mentioned facing the challenge of chasing their own oven around the cabin while trying to make dinner. The pressure cooker, too, ran amok and spilt its leftovers as it rolled about in the cabin sole. The cabin began to take on a look and smell as though a band of drunken pirates had taken up residence and had a grand old party. Perhaps we were visited by Aaron and his ghostly mates. After the comparative beating that we took off the coast of Cape Mendocino, it was about then that things started to get a little hazy for me, and I'm not talking about the weather. I'm talking about inside my head. After darkness settled in, it would begin to feel like my world was smaller somehow, like we were confined to a small tract of ocean in which we could sail as fast or slow as we wanted, but could never sail out of. I could never find the words to convey the feeling, but it was a result of seeing the great wide open sea and sky during the daylight hours, and then nothing at all after dark. Encroaching darkness steals your space. Between the madness of Mendocino and the chaos of Point Conception, we had what felt like an eternity of less intense winds but large, sloppy seas, making sleep elusive and setting us up for a particularly difficult passage outside of the Channel Islands. Though unable to sleep through the higher winds and larger seas off Point Conception, neither could I stay awake and alert at the helm. In the middle of the night of our 12th day at sea, a hatch in the salon managed to vibrate its way open. The seas took immediate notice of the open invitation, and we were forthwith startled to our senses by the sound of crashing waves into the cabin below. Wendy rushed below to find the open hatch and correct the situation. Day 13, and as the sky slowly lightened, I began to feel that familiar old feeling of severe fatigue. When I was young, I knew if I could just make it through to sunrise without crashing, I'd catch a second wind. Unfortunately, I'm just not the same as I used to be. I just can't cope with it long enough anymore. As I tried to fight it off, Wendy woke up and sat with me for a while and talked to me, trying to keep me awake. She made fun of me for wigging out as I tried to maintain consciousness. The conditions were particularly hard to handle, and neither Otto nor Wendy were likely to be able to handle the helm. In my condition, neither was I. Another main waypoint that I'd been watching us creep toward was Bishop Rock, just southwest of the Catalina Islands. It, too, seemed to take an eternity to reach, and the seas were still so rough. I was growing very weary of the conditions. There was finally a light at the end of the tunnel, and in more than one way. Ensenada was only a day or so away, and the forecast was showing some sun. During our final night at sea, and having finished my midnight 0300 watch, I was sleeping quite soundly. Then, in the middle of the night, well before sunrise, as we crossed into Mexican waters, a very low-pitched droning noise faded in from the distance. I awoke to memories of a nearby ship's engine in the dense fog off the coast of Hidalguay and rose from my cockpit bed saying, "What the fuck is that?" Wendy was in the same confused and excited state as I was and was thinking the same thing. Then, as the sound grew nearer, we heard the characteristic womp, womp, womp of a large helicopter. I think there were two, but we saw no lights. They circled us a couple of times and then faded away. Finally, the last day, after I don't know how many consecutive days and nights of being tossed about in the multi-directional and crowded swell, on this, our final day before landfall, we are greeted with still, flat, and glassy water, sunny skies, and nary a breath of wind. It feels like I'm standing in the debris field in the wake of the Tasmanian devil, dazed and confused. What to do now? I'm really not wanting to burn any more fuel, but I just want to get to our destination. However, I do not want to arrive in the dark, but I really want to get to our destination. But if we just take our time doing this last 75 miles, we can arrive tomorrow morning. Fuck it. Garth! My decision to do this was partly influenced by the need to run the water maker before getting to Ensenada, and so that was Wendy's job for the next few hours. As we motored along through the stillness with Wendy making water, I stood watch, although I have to admit sometimes my watch may have been lightly filtered by my eyelids. Then it struck me. We're going to need rum. Wendy!
What?
We're going to need rum for when we get there.
Okay!
Like the salty piratess that she be, she made sure we were well equipped for landfall celebrations. Our buddy boat was already in Ensenada by that time. Yes, as expected, they definitely did beat us to Ensenada. As the sun made its way across the sky and we motored through the hours, Ensenada slowly grew nearer and nearer. It was just after midnight when, after a brief game of chicken with a pelican, we motored through the entrance of the breakwater and into harbor. We had reserved a slip at Baja Naval Marina. We scanned around the marina for an empty slip, but couldn't really see anything because of all the bright lights. I called on the radio in the hopes that security would answer, but no such luck. Finally, at 0100 on October 1st, exactly the day I had given as our estimated arrival date, we set the anchor just outside the marina in the area marked Anchorage on the chart. I'd heard conflicting stories about whether it was allowed or not, but we didn't have any options at that point and would only be there a few hours until sunrise anyway. We dropped the anchor and opened the rum. Total days at sea, 15. Total ground covered, 1,391.53 nautical miles. Engine run time, 61 hours. Average speed, 3.84 knots. Feeling of accomplishment, priceless. Join us in the next episode as we voyage down the rest of the Baja and round into the Sea of Cortez. New episodes are released every second Sunday or thereabouts. Explore our captivating blogs and thrilling videos and contribute to the project at www.sailinginfidels.com. Follow us on TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram for updates, photos, and videos. And don't miss out. Stay connected and be part of the incredible journey. You are the wind in our sails.